every city resident or household. And so this gives the basics, and that's one piece, and then this piece was put out by the campaign, and this is the one that urges voters, this went to likely voters in the city of Santa Cruz, first of all to the absentee voters, and it will then go to poll voters. So this is privately funded by the campaign and urges a yes vote. So I just want to distinguish, if you're getting these things in your home and you wonder where they come from, two different sources. So basically what Measure S is, and I'm suspecting most of you know this, a measure that was put on the ballot by an action of the city council to increase the existing sales tax within the city of Santa Cruz by 0.25%. It's currently 9%, and this would change it to 9.25%. And that is the money that's collected. And this is, pick up this brochure because it's very clearly laid out in this brochure. The existing sales tax, when you buy something, you get a 9% sales tax. Most people don't know where that goes, and it's easy to think, well, that's going to the city. I'm buying this in the city, and so that money goes to the city. But in fact, only 5% goes, excuse me, only 1% of the existing tax goes to the city, and yeah, and or a penny, let me put it that way, of the nine pennies on a dollar, one penny, a dollar fifty, 1.5 pennies, goes to the city now. 5 pennies out of that 9 pennies goes to the state directly. And I think that's spelled out in here, isn't it? And some goes to other local jurisdiction. There's a little fraction that goes to the metro, the bus company, a little fraction goes to our library, a little fraction goes to what's the other one?
RTC,
Regional Transportation Commission. But anyway, the main point is of what you pay when you buy something in the city of Santa Cruz, the bulk of that goes to the state. And a little sliver of it currently goes to the city. So we would add, for every $100 purchase, currently you pay $9 in taxes. With Measure S, you'd pay $9.25. So it's adding a quarter to every $100 purchase. The difference is that all of that money stays here in Santa Cruz. So that's the big thing. It's not a case where we're once again sharing it to all these other agencies. That's money that we will capture here. So that's what it is. Now the question is, why does it matter? The reason it matters is that the city has in recent years been seeing a looming fiscal tsunami coming at us of increase in costs and either stable or decreasing revenues. Now part of that, as I'm sure most of you know, is the situation of the state pension, optimistic projections on what it was going to earn in its investments. The city, as other public agencies, participates in CalPERS, the California Public Employment Retirement System. We rely on that to pay the retirement benefits for our city public employees, as do the county and as do a vast number of other public agencies. So we pay into CalPERS, and then CalPERS pays out to our employees for their pensions. So our employees, by contractual arrangement, have a right to the pensions that they have that are part of their employment agreement with the city. So they are still owed those pension payments when they retire. Now, people may have a disagreement with public pensions, but the fact is they exist, and we have a contractual obligation to pay them. During the recession, the Great Recession, CalPERS, the state agency, continued to make very optimistic projections on its earnings, which did not materialize at all, but failed to make adjustments. And so several years down the line, and Mark is going to give you chapter and verse on this, so I'm giving you the baby layperson's version, and I always love it because Marcus can tell you the details. But I'm telling you the kind of general overview. So now states and public agencies all over the state are being assessed additional payments to backfill the shortfall on the state pension system. So what I want to convey by this rather baroque story is that it's not that the city of Santa Cruz did anything badly. And in fact, the city of Santa Cruz saw this coming, and starting, I'm going to think maybe 10 years ago, we started a two-tier pension system before it happened at the state level. The city of Santa Cruz has paid down some of its pension obligations. We have renegotiated with our employees different contributions, employee contributions towards the state public CalPERS fund. So we've been really quite proactive, much more than other cities, in understanding this was coming at us and taking steps to reduce our pension obligation. Nonetheless, it's still a very significant factor. But again, it's not the only factor. So as I said, there's several things happening that are contributing to our financial challenge these days. And so I always ask this question, how many people have ordered online? Here, is there, everyone raises their hand, you've ordered online? Okay, you see where I'm going with this. Over time, that has undercut our sales tax returns. How many of you have, either you or a friend, have bought an electric car or a hybrid car? Well, the gas tax is going down. And what is the other one that I want to think of? How many of you have switched from cable to live streaming, or you've abandoned your landline? Yeah, so those used to be, have a utility tax attached to them. And if you abandon those, then the city's not getting that. So I'm trying to say there are a lot of little actions that are how our consumer patterns are changing that are eroding. It's not we're going off a cliff, but over time, it's eroding what we would call our traditional sources of revenue. So, and then the other thing that we're all experiencing, if you have a business, you know you're paying your employees more. You're paying your health insurance more. If you've built something, you know construction costs are increasing too. And those are affecting the city just like they're affecting schools and businesses and everybody else. So you have these increase in just operating costs and an erosion of the traditional sources, and then also this big assessment to pay back the CalPERS. So I just want to give a picture of the complexities. A lot of people, as this Measure S goes forward, they say, well, just live within your means. Well, we're trying. And I do want to convey the other thing that the city has done. Last year, we have a balanced budget last year and this year. Last year, the departments took out about $500,000 from what they had originally anticipated. This year, they're being directed to eliminate, is it $2.5 million?
$3.5 million.
So we're making cuts, and that means, let me just tell you, what's been on the list for several years, get a new fire truck for the fire department, because they're using a, what is it, 1999 truck that was given to them by the university for wildland fires, because the university said it's past its useful lifetime, we don't want it, you guys can have it. So we got a 1999 fire truck for wildland fires that we'd like to replace, but they cost $500,000. So there are some, you know, you don't notice it day to day, but what we see is we have obsolete equipment that needs to be replaced. We have aging infrastructure. When a water main blows, or it was a sewer line, I guess, that blew. It wasn't covered by an enterprise fund on Ocean Street, I think it was. Oh my gosh, well, that's a couple of months worth of work that was not in the budget. When Westcliff Path falls into the ocean. Oh gosh, we didn't anticipate that. So there are emergencies. There's, you know, we're a 150-plus-year-old city. There's a really old infrastructure.
Let me interrupt just to say, when the earthquake happened and they dug up the main pipe on Pacific Avenue, it was redwood held together with bands, and that was the main water line in downtown
Santa Cruz. But not currently in use.
No,
but it was still there.
That's how old some of our infrastructure is.
Every year, our finance department works with the departments to develop a budget, and that's going to be coming to us Our study session will be June 6th, day after Election Day. And we'll see. You know, if Measure S passes, we will trim $3.5 million, and we'll combine that with some economies. But if Measure S doesn't pass, as Marcus has explained it, it's a game changer, because we have been, in the last few years, making economies and deferring expenditures and always trying to protect the frontline services. So it may be that the employees are working with equipment that should be replaced or unsafe situations, et cetera. But we're coming to the point where the protection of frontline public service will have to be compromised. And those of you who were around in the Great Recession probably remember, we did cut 100 positions from Parks and Rec. We did close the employees took furloughs, they gave up something, our front counter desks had to be closed, that wasn't good for public service. Our goal is to provide good public service, and to do that we have to have adequate funds. So that's kind of the story of why Measure S was put on the ballot. I guess the other thing that I'd just say briefly, and Marcus has some great slides to pass out, a slide packet here. Our general fund, and again, I suspect many of you know this, the city budget overall is about $250 million, very broadly speaking. About half of that, broadly speaking, is our enterprise funds. So that's water, wastewater, trash collection, landfill, and those...
The wharf, the golf course?
No, well, wharf is not an enterprise fund. No, it used to be. It operates out... The wharf has pilings. Forget about the wharf master plan. The wharf has pilings that need to be replaced. And okay, we'll just put those pilings off for another year, but at some point, it gets more expensive. Or difficult. So our enterprise funds, those public utilities, are paid for by user fees. And as the costs go up, for one reason or another, and much of it, I will say, is due to A, it's a very old system, and B, it's highly regulated and has to meet very high standards. But as those costs go up, they can be recovered by increases in fees. So we have the enterprise funds, which are really independent, and then we have the general fund, which is supported by taxes. So that's sales tax and a little bit of property tax and some admissions tax and the hotel tax. There are a variety of taxes and revenue sources that make up our general fund. So what does our general fund support? It supports the things that people really want. They want public safety. They want to have police and fire 24/7, that's responsive. They want to have parks well maintained and available and opened. And these guys talked about the voters' commitment to the Green Belt. How many years ago was that? 25, 30, it was a long time ago. That's a publicly held value. And all the neighborhood parks that we have, and the Westcliff Path, and the Riverwalk, and the beaches, all these things are, people really love those. And they say, how many kids go into junior guards every summer? You know, gazillions. So all of these things are services, community facilities that people really, really value. Another big chunk, so the biggest chunk, again, I'm going to talk broadly, almost 50% of the general fund is public safety, fire and police, straight off the bat. Next biggest one, 15% plus or minus, parks and rec. And that includes the wharf and all the parks and all the classes. Next one is public works, and that's stuff like the potholes and the emergency repairs and so forth, the storm sewers that flood intersections every winter that we know should be replaced, but they're very expensive. So that's the general fund. So that's what we're talking about with Measure S. Measure S would add a quarter on entirely kept local sales tax for every $100 you spend, and that would be kept local to do these really basic general fund functions that people care about. So that's kind of the short version. I hope it was short. I described the two brochures. I hope you take them, look them over, they're different. And Marcus is here to answer.
You have yard signs at the back.
Yeah, when you're, if you're really motivated, take a yard sign. So questions? Yeah, questions.
So, you know, in the category of living within your means, you know, I've been to a lot of city meetings and stuff over corridors, plans and whatnot, and there seemed to be an endless stream of consultants hired, and I know that cost a lot of money over the years, traffic and this and that and the other, you know, for Ocean Street plan, this plan, that plan. Where did that money come from, and how was that planned for? Looking at the big picture, we're on this super tight budget, but we can afford what seems almost like, to me, sort of a luxury thing, because a lot of what they said was out of date by the time they even said it. You know, it's like, oh, this study was done and it was 2 years ago. So can you address that?
Marcus can. I will just say generally the city uses consultants for lots of different things. And I think maybe you're talking about a certain category of projects, but
yeah,
anyway,
but it's stuff related to the corridors plan and
some
traffic
of them are,
things.
I think, are covered by the transportation impact fees that are collected.
The developers pay about half the cost.
And some by the
they pay for the consultants
for the corridor.
Yes,
plan?
Because well, they pay into the planning department, but when they're charged fees, if you build let's say a building downtown. Or a house or whatever, you pay fees to the city, and about half of the what goes to these consultants or other kinds of stuff in planning comes from the fees being paid by people building things.
And then those
I've been at a lot of meetings where developers are fees have been waived or delayed or whatever.
Well,
too.
They do get charged a lot. But do you want to add to that, Marcus?
You're of course right on point. Developers pay extra surcharges when they do projects, and that goes into a reserve account that's held to pay for additional studies for future development. So
in other words, that money's dedicated and couldn't be used for anything else?
Correct.
So sales taxes don't go toward these big studies?
Some of it goes towards, some of it doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
Less than half of it, because half of it's paid by the fees they're paying.
And the other half is paid for out of the general fund?
And
I don't
it
know.
Really depends on the topic.
Yeah, on the project.
I mean, if you're talking about the water department.
Well, I'm talking about like
studies.
The traffic specialist that was hired, the guy from Scotland, well, I forget where he was from, he had an accent.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
at those community meetings for, like that would be one example, or mm-hmm. one time there were a whole team of consultants hired to help create the Ocean Street area plan. They came in, and then there was the gal from the San Francisco, what was her name?
Oh, the Diet and Barbara.
Those people who came in for and held endless numbers of meetings related to the corridor plan. That was a lot of consultant time. You're saying developer fees paid for all of them? 50% of them?
I think it's not just 50%. When any project's done, there's an assessment on, there's a cost to review the plans, the cost.
But these weren't projects.
Yeah.
This was just theory.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah.
And so every time somebody brings a project in, a portion, there's charges that go into a reserve account to help for future analysis on future growth with regards to our general plan. So any of those studies that are related to that general plan are probably paid 100% from fees collected from projects by developers.
100%?
Depending on the project, right? It's not a pot of $20 million, right? So if generally speaking, there might be $2 or $3 million at any point in time that we're holding money to pay for a future plan. So.
And those fees couldn't be used to pay for parks and infrastructure?
No, they're restricted for when the developer makes a payment, they're restricted for that purpose.
By state law, they can't spend it on anything other than something that would help facilitate development in the future and stuff.
But let me
maybe
also,
I need more facts. I don't quite get it, but maybe that's a private discussion or something. It just doesn't
you
make
you
sense.
You can do this. And
yeah.
Just the corridors plan, and I know that's something that you've been particularly
interested
engaged
in.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to be honest about that. But that corridor's plan was driven by the adopted general plan. Now, it turns out, it didn't materialize in a way that had community consensus at all. But the group that did the work for the revision of the downtown plan most recently, which was adopted unanimously, which calls for some increased density in the downtown area that connects better to the river, there was a lot of community process in that, and that was unanimously adopted. And I think that will be an area where we can get additional housing in an area that's appropriate. So again, some people may disagree with that, but there was a policy basis that was pretty thoroughly vetted and drew on that pot of money for bringing in consultants, because we honestly do not keep in-house the kind of technical consultants to do all this work. So to my mind, it makes sense that when you have a specialized project, you go out and hire specialized consultants.
That was also about zoning updating things that were driven by the general plan, which was a zoning and design issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Nancy.
So, this has been really informative, and I understand that your revenue has taken hits. Really interesting to learn how. I'm wondering if it's possible to look at your revenue and compare that, what kind of slope that's been on, you know, stable, declining, because we're all getting things online, or what. What's that line like, trajectory like, compared to your expenses in the general fund?
I'm glad you asked that, and I'm going to ask Marcus to take that over. And just one thing that I'll prelude, and he will probably amplify that. If you look at the pension wage that's hitting all public entities in California right now, it's big, but we've been proactive, as I mentioned, in a whole lot of ways. Economies, creating new revenue, building our tax base, and hopefully Measure S. And we believe that with all these things working together, we can get through that. Then our two-tiered and now three-tiered because of the state's actions as well. That will stabilize in the out years. Mm-hmm. What Marcus has said is more of a concern to him is the continued decline in our traditional sources. We can get through the pension thing. We'll get through that. But what we're trying to look at is, and you look at our sign, is what? Safety services and sustainability. People think sustainability, that's about the environment. But it's also about the fiscal health of the city. And that's what we're looking for, that we can continue to provide services with the resources to do that. So you have much more to say.
I guess I'd just add, what the problem with the nation is, here we are in the most booming of economies. And
yes.
We can't make it now. Come on. So
it's not getting to public sector.
Yeah, so know that that's where a lot of us are coming from. Are your revenues crashing that much?
It's. Let me put it this way. Great question, Ella.
I was just
going
to say, share those.
I'm not prone to hyperbole, and I don't, you know, I've been proud to work here. I came here in 2012 in local Watsonville. I've been proud of that. I've been able to work with the city council and present budgets that are more realistic about construction going forward. Not the sky is falling, let's get crazy and worry, but really try to focus on what we really think is credible to happen. And we've been able to revise our models to really focus on what we think is likely to happen, not worst case scenarios. And I've been really proud of the council's kind of embrace that. To your point, our models 3 years ago told us this year we're going to have a 2.4, 2.6% gap where expenses were going to outpace revenues by 2.6%. That was 3 years ago. When we got to this year, it was 2.7%. So we've been doing a lot of work in our modeling to try to refine that and really, like I said, get a realistic perspective. So that's the base related stuff. To your question about that pattern, whether I'm talking to the library, or whether I'm talking to other government agencies, who I happen to from time to time, or in state associations, or here in Santa Cruz, everybody has the same patterns happening. Their costs are going up steep, and the revenues are not growing like we've seen traditionally. You're right, we've been in a booming economy, and this market's been doing really well. But our sales tax, if we go back to 2004, 5, 6, 7, we might have been seeing 12% growth in some years, 13, 8% growth. We're seeing maybe 4s and 6s. So our sales tax growth is growing, but not at the same pace that it should be in a vibrant economy.
And same with like hotel tax?
Well, hotel's a different thing happening. The visitors are coming, but the rooms are disappearing. They're disappearing from the hotels, and they're disappearing in the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And we've been proactively finding them. We've developed a really strong internal audit collections unit that's doing really fantastic work finding them, but we don't have enough resources to find them all. So transit occupancy tax or hotel tax is disappearing into the neighborhoods, and people aren't putting their hands up and say, I'm doing it here. But we are finding them, and we're going back and collecting them and find them, but we don't have enough resources to find everybody. So that's the sales tax as a hotel. You talked about gas tax, which also has sales tax to it when vehicles are buying less fuel for good reasons. No problem with this reasoning, but there's less fuel being spent, so our sales tax and the gas tax is shrinking. And then there's changing habits. Big chunks of our population are spending differently. They're not buying things for kids anymore. They're might be buying stuff for medical or trips or traveling. And then that middle segment, they're having kids and they're having to buy stuff. But then their kids, they're coming up in this different economy where they're services. They want to do services, not buy things. And so there's just changes in consumers all across. That middle group is still buying things, but the top group is either traveling or not spending or going to medical. The bottom group is now looking into, I'd rather do an experience than buying a trinket. And some of those things they used to buy, I grew up, I'll date myself, the beginning of some video games, and I used to go to Kmart and tell my mom and dad, I want that game. And it was $15 or $20, and we'd buy that game, and there's a sales tax on that. Well, my kids are buying games, and it's an app. And they don't buy physical games anymore, everything's an app. My godson's, playing whatever this new thing is, I forget what it is, but it's this free cloud thing. He's playing that all the time, and there's no tax on that. They're not buying games anymore. They're not buying DVDs anymore. They're not buying CDs. So there's whole segments of the market that are just gone from a tax base.
Also, this might seem ancient history, but the city used to totally be funded out of property tax. And in 1978, when Prop 13 passed, and not just on residential properties, but on all the property in the state, about 50% of which is not residential, the money that came to the cities dropped like a rock. I mean, went way, way down, and that's when the city began passing things like sales taxes, utility taxes, and so forth to make up for that difference. One possibility would be to go back to a property tax. I don't think you should get rid of Prop 13 on residential property, but if you look at the fact that the railroads own massive amounts of property in California, and they're not paying taxes. And even when you sell your house, it sometimes gets reassessed and the property tax goes up. They've worked out ways that they never, I've seen this contract where they sell a piece of property but have a special condition in it that they have not sold it for purpose of taxes. I don't know how they got away with that or get away with that. But the end result is that large property owned by commercial and industrial firms never get reassessed. And so their property taxes are the same level they were in 1978. And that's really costing us, and the cities then have to go to these other taxes, like sales taxes, to make up for it. That could be changed, and there's some people talking about that.
I have a question.
That's the League of Women Voters. If you want to get into the issue of Prop 13 reform, League of Women Voters is doing a statewide initiative. It's turning into a two-year effort they've started, but plug into them, and that is profound. Okay.
How high has our sales tax ever been?
Not higher than this, and in the brochure that...
Didn't we have one that sunset, and that was never replaced?
We've had some that have gone and then sunset, but they've been replaced by something else.
And made them permanent, I believe, isn't that what we did? We did have one that sunsetted, I remember that.
Right.
It's been mentioned. I've been on the city council for a long time. So I've been through three economic crashes. I came on in 92, and I think that was the SNL, and then I don't even remember what caused the other ones.
But I'm thinking that we had one that sunsetted.
But one was a temporary.
Right.
And it sunsetted, but then I believe it got made permanent.
It was replaced. Yes. But this is the highest we've ever gone. But we're still in the ballpark with other counties that are...
Yes.
And other cities in the...
In the state.
That's something I wanted to address also. It's my understanding that the state has a law that you can't go above 9.25% for state tax.
Right.
So it's my perception that this is our only chance to get that 0.25% specifically to Santa Cruz, because if we don't grab it, chances are the state could up it another 0.25%.
Or another public entity will come in and make a case for it.
Exactly. So the reason I am supporting this, I'm speaking for myself, not for Santa Cruz neighbors, but I think this is the only chance we are ever going to have to grab that extra 0.25% for specifically for the city of Santa Cruz. That's my understanding. Am I correct in that thinking?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, there are, and Marcus could give more information, there are a couple of state legislative permitted increases beyond that, but they tend to be for big regional initiatives. So, like in the LA region. But
if they had raised it, then we would never have a chance to raise it again for the city.
Correct.
And just a couple other points on that. So this would put us at the state cap, and some, you know, in discussion, online discussions, whatever, people say, well, why aren't other cities doing this? Well, they are, and I think you can fully expect the county to come forward with an initiative, with a sales tax increase in the fall. They
not,
are talking
not for us,
but
kind of the people that live in the unincorporated area.
Yeah.
Right. What is Watsonville's?
9.25%
Yeah. And so this brochure has some of the comparative ones, but between, you know, 9.25%, we are in the ballpark, and the cities that aren't there now will be very soon because they are all facing this. So I, you know, what I want to convey is, as an elected official, I think it's fair to say all of us want to provide good service to the community, whether it's Parks and Rec or public safety or fixing your streets or whatever. And there's a lot of need and finite resources, and I think there's a good deal of integrity in all our departments. You know, no one's perfect, but people try to do their best. And we try to find ways to do it more efficiently, more economically, and still deliver that service. So I think overall the city is very well served by its various departments and by its finance departments. And I will end by saying that the city has a AA+ bond rating, and those aren't easy to get. So that's the standard of people.
And I will say that I just got an email from Tina Scholl with the city, and Marcus and I were just talking that they want to have a budget meeting with Santa Cruz neighbors to talk about what's in our budget and what we need to go through and get into the nitty-gritty of it. So look for that. We'll probably pick a date towards the end of the month and have more details there, because it'll be going to council. So I say that's coming. Yes.
Did Marcus or Cynthia say that there would be cuts anyway, even if this passes, when we have the budget hearings?
Yes.
As part of living within your means.
Yeah. Well, we know that in our homes.
Don't we all? Yeah.
That we don't have, you know, the ability to levy anything on anyone else. We just have to deal with it. But I was at a hearing where Marcus gave one of his great presentations, and he gave a figure, a percentage of right now what the pension obligations are and how they will multiply in the future. You gave a big percentage for down the road.
You know, I know which one you're talking about. It's the one with the red bars go down.
Yeah.
That's if we don't do anything. Well, our percentage assessments will be going up, but whether the city goes in the red as a result of this depends on whether or not we're proactive.
Is this the last slide?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is the percentage now of the budget?
These are great questions.
And well, yeah.
So this is not me delaying or deferring. Pension's complicated.
Yeah, I know.
But it can be as simple as this. as a way of an example, the state intends, the state manages the pension fund. Their expectation is that their investment returns are going to pay 60% of the costs, and then employees and employers make up the difference. That's their intent. So I'm just trying to set that stage. The state investment fund says we're going to hit 7.5% of growth every year in our investments. Three out of the last 6 years in this really booming economy, the stock market is really strong for the last many years. Three out of the last 6 years, the state had 0.1%. 0.1.
Returns.
Return.
Not so.
0.6% and 2.4%. Three out of the last 6 years.
Like a CD.
It's disgusting because they're saying we're target seven. So when they miss their target, that they shift. What they're doing now is they're shifting. I call it a surcharge, a shortfall surcharge. It's like a couple years ago, everybody was getting a surcharge for fuel. The state is now forcing their investment shortfall on all the agencies throughout California. What that means for in real dollars is $10 million more from Santa Cruz is paying to the state to make up for these shortfalls. Last I see, nobody at the state is cutting their budget. They're not firing or replacing their investment advisors, who probably millions, getting paid millions.
Yeah.
Well, they're not worried about that.
Might be a good place to start.
Well, they're putting
the
that pressure.
What the state?
Let me just say, it's David and Goliath, and we are members of the League of California Cities. The county is a member of California Counties Association, something like that. We're all interested in a more stable formula for pensions looking out. And that involves some of the recommendations that I mentioned that we've done, which is to go to a multi-tier system to pay down our obligations and so forth. And the city has already done all of those things. So some communities are playing catch up. I think we've gotten a good start on it. And again, if we can do this combination of some economies and some new revenue and some continue the pension reform, we can, if you turn on the final page here, you'll see it.
Slide 11 and then slide 16.
Oh, it's 8. That's the one I'm looking at. It's page 8, slide 16. The city's plan for a balanced future.
Right.
If we just cook along and say, oh, we owe all this stuff to CalPERS, we just go red, 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 deep, deep, deep. But if we can take a combination of steps, you see, we can just come very close on an annual basis to a sustainable fiscal situation. So that's what we're looking at. And the thing that I want to make really clear is it's not one single bullet, and it's not going to give you glorious new stuff. The goal is to sustain the core services that we depend on and provide good public service. So
I wanted to add one quick thing back to the question she had asked earlier, which was a really good question about the consultants. Just to get a sense of the scale of that, I just asked Marcus, the city, 7% of the general fund is all planning. About half of that's covered by developer fees, so that's like say 3.5% that's still on taxes out of the total general fund, if I got the numbers right, ballpark. And of course, it's not all going to consultants. The 3.5 that's left, that's you have to pay for the staff, the people in the building inspection department, and all the people that work for planning and so forth. So, although you're right about the question, I mean, if say you don't like as many consultants or they're doing too many studies or whatever.
Well, it just seemed like a lot of money.
No, I'm not arguing that. So I'm not arguing with you about it. Yeah. I just want to suggest that that's not the cause of the city's crisis, because the percentage that's going to those consultants of the overall budget is a very small piece of it. Most of it goes to police and fire and then to parks and recreation, and only way down the line do you even get to planning. And then within the planning, that's a very small percentage of what they do there. So, and half of it's paid for by not by taxes, but by people paying fees of one kind or another. So it's an impact. You should continue to make whatever arguments you want to make about what
I'm just curious, but so you're saying only 7% of the general fund covers all those people in planning?
Yes.
And planning, building, all that stuff. That's 7% of the budget.
Code enforcement, all those crappy illegal units that my students live in, you know, all that stuff.
is only 7% of the whole budget. And half of that is covered by developer fees?
Well, fees of one kind or another. Development fees or home fees. If you build an accessory unit, you pay some fees, permits.
Fees that are directed only to that?
Right.
I'll just give another example of the use of a consultant. We just recently had a study done of, what was it called? Staff utilization study for the police department. I may not have exactly the right name, but how is the police department organized? How's the workload assigned? The various responsibilities, etc. And the idea that brought in some outside consultants, you know, it was a competitive study for who was selected, but they did a very deep look both internally and out in the community. What do you expect of your police department? What's working well? What's not? Etc. And out of that came the new neighborhood organization that the new chief has put into effect. And God only knows, we got plenty of issues in Santa Cruz. So, and yet we have finite resources. So the police department, what is it? It's a big chunk of that 50% on general fund. It's big. And yet, at any given time, there are just a few officers out on the street. So the question was asked, how do we work smarter? And we did use a consultant to help in that decision. It wasn't.
Well, I'm not against consultants,
no, but,
you know, as a rule. But in this case, to be perfectly honest, I felt that the planning department had a clear agenda. And every consultant they hired supported that agenda. And all these people from the community went, but what about this and what impacts? And you were talking about impacts. What about impacts on my neighborhood? And it was sort of like, not important. What we need is big buildings. You know, and that seemed to be the general, so excuse me if I'm a little angry, but you know, that, you know, having spent hours and hours and hours of my life with those meetings, that was my impression. You know, it was kind of frustrating. And then I'm here, the city doesn't have any money, but you spent all that money on consultants.
I would say, honestly, that that project was not as satisfying to many people as they had, as productive as they had hoped it would be, if I can just be honest.
I mean, as Cynthia said earlier, the way that happened is there's a general, we had a general plan process that took us, how many years? 5 years or something, a long time to get the general plan.
2.5 years.
Formally, but it seemed
but
like
it
forever.
Was formally.
Whatever it was, there was a lot of citizen involvement in that. And people said, out of that plan, we don't want to have our neighborhoods intensified with mass, maybe some more accessory units, but not big projects in the middle of our neighborhoods. We want to see growth downtown and along the transportation corridors, because there maybe people can use less cars to, because they're living on a bus route or whatever. And that's the decision that was made by the city based on the public input and so forth. Once they got that mandate from the general plan, then they started trying to implement it. Okay, let's start to implement the corridor plan. How much more density can we put in here? And so they had a message from the general plan, this is a place to put a bunch more density. When they went out and ran it out on the road, people said, no, not on my, you know, not on the street,
not on
the corner that's in front of my neighborhood or whatever it is and stuff. And so people changed, in effect, when it came to the implementing it, didn't have the same view that they did when they talked globally about what should happen. It's not as if the city or some consultant came along and said, oh, I have an idea, let's just push this stuff into the corridors. It came out of a plan that really was part of a public process. It turns out they should have done something different about the way they did the general plan, because in that process you would have found out that maybe this was not going to be quite as successful as you thought it was.
Yeah.
But it's not, the city's not perfect. They make big mistakes. We made big mistakes.
Anyway, I would say that's one experience, but generally, I think it helps the city with its initiatives.
Yeah, and the police,
yeah, and outside
the police
aren't
it did.
Thing. I think sometimes it gets the city a different perspective as well. Sometimes they don't get what, I mean, you have aha moments when you have outside consultants come in and tell you something different. So anyway, thank you all for coming. We'll probably do a budget meeting towards the end of the month. We'll work that out. We've done budget 101 before, because it's really hard to understand. I know probably 10 years, no, longer than that, probably 14 years ago when we were starting Santa Cruz Neighbors, both Lynn and I sat down with the finance director and said, explain. I mean, we really, we went into his office and said, explain this, because we don't understand and we want to know where everything goes. So I think that will be extremely helpful. And it's very useful. So stay tuned. Go talk to your neighbors and hopefully you can find it to see these two measures as being very worthwhile. We will probably address the rent control measure as well, but that will be sometime later in September.
Did they get their qualified?
They got enough in the gross number petition.
They haven't been vetted.
The city offices were closed today. They were counting to make sure that they had the correct, they met the minimum number. And those will now go over the county elections and the signatures will be verified. I fully intend that they'll.
So that'll be for the fall.
Yes, that's on the fall ballot. That's why we didn't include it here. So, thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Yes, I can publicly announce something really quick.
Sure.
It's just, so I'm actually a part of an organization at UC Santa Cruz and we very much agree with you guys. And we're actually holding a meeting next week on Thursday where we're bringing a lot of the UC Santa Cruz administration. And we actually got the office of president to come talk to us. And it's going to be probably at least 100 people, but we want to encourage anyone to come, including community members, because they have a say in this. And it's just going to be a lot of questions and dialogue and talking about the over-enrollment and all the issues that community members are also facing. Because as a student, we also don't want these 10,000 students to be accepted. So I do have a few forms here in case anyone just happens to be interested and wants to ask questions to the Office of President. It will be next Thursday, 4 to 6. So I'll just leave a few by the front door just in case. So that would be really awesome.
You want to announce where it is?
It's going to be at the Hay Barn on campus. Yes, so it will be very professional and we want to have a lot of dialogue and we definitely want to hear from multiple people. So. Yes, it would be really awesome if anyone wants to come.
I think you will see people.
Yes, I think you will. Thank you very much.
I'll put it to you by the door.
All righty, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, guys.
Huh?
This
was excellent.